Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's you, Jamie. Don't be alarmed, but I think there's a guy following you. Maybe we should get that guard dog we talked about? Nothing too scary. Maybe like a Bichon with an attitude? You know, Progressive's collision insurance covers injured dogs and cats at no extra cost, so... Wait, the guy stood up when I stood up. He's on the phone. He's looking right at me. Oh, wait, it's just my reflection. Don't tell anyone about this.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Pet coverage not available in New Hampshire and North Carolina.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 151 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes, search Locked On Thunder, subscribe to the podcast there, leave a review once you're on that page also, and find us on audioboom.com. Log on to normantranscript.com, check out my blog, Thunder Road. It's under the sports tab on the site. You can find all my Thunder coverage there. I have a ton of coverage up there right now on the Thunder made a really big trade, a trade deadline day on Thursday, with the Bulls. And now after that, who should be starting after that? I got a piece up on that and what the possible starting lineup options are for them as they head into Friday's game against the Lakers. I have another piece breaking down the trade. I have another piece breaking down the cap ramifications of the trade, how the Thunder fitted into their cap because the trade salaries were a little bit weird. You know, I've got some more stuff up on Enes Kanter's probable return for Friday night's game against the Lakers. Lots of stuff up there now. You can check that all out. I'm going to have a game preview for Friday night as well. And remember, I'm on every day of the week, Monday through Friday. I know this week was a little bit strange, but back to the usual now. I've got this as the Friday episode, and then I'll be back Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday next week, and so on and so forth after that until the rest of the season. Less than 2 months left in the regular season. It's pretty amazing. The Thunder have, you know, the All-Star break is considered the first half of the season, and then there's the second half, but like there's 25 games left in the season. We're more than two-thirds of the way into the year right now. It's amazing how quickly it's gone. I recorded a pretty long breakdown, pretty much just going over the trade with Sean Hyken, who's the Bulls beat reporter for The Athletic Chicago and host Locked On Bulls. So I'm just going to splice in that conversation right now. We had a really good, like, 40-minute long in-depth conversation on the deal. I'm talking about Taj Gibson, talking about Cameron Payne, talking about Doug McDermott. All that stuff. We'll outline the details of the trade in there. Before we get to Sean, though, I just want to take a quick second to talk about SeatGeek. Buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long time. It's always been hard to find the best deal for that game or show you want to go to. None of those older ticket sites want to change that. But SeatGeek is different. They've come along and created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. SeatGeek is always the first place I go to look for tickets to a game or concert. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and I just used it the other day to look at tickets for Sunday's game against the Pelicans because I have a friend who's coming in, and they want to be able to go to the game against the Pelicans. So it's easy. You just pop it open. You pop open that app. You check it out, and it's so easy and intuitive to be able to find tickets there for anything. Everything on SeatGeek is designed to make life easier for sports and music fans. SeatGeek does all the price comparison for you by searching multiple ticket sites and ensuring that you get the best possible deal. SeatGeek does all the work and you save your time and money. And SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck too. That's why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. You'll immediately see any underpriced seats and be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. Best of all, my listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the SeatGeek app, go to the Settings tab, click Add a Promo Code, enter the promo code LO Thunder, that's LO like locked on, and SeatGeek is going to give you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LO Thunder today. Quick break, and then we'll get to that conversation with Sean.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily Oklahoma City Thunder podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, here's a Locked On Bulls, Locked On Thunder mini episode. I'm Sean Hyken of The Athletic, co-host of Locked On Bulls. With me, Fred Katz of the Norman Transcript and the host of Locked On Thunder. And the Bulls and Thunder made a trade today.
They did. They made a pretty big trade. Some like legitimate names in here. So
it might be the biggest trade of that actual I mean, I guess maybe the Nerlens Noel one, but like it might be the biggest trade of the deadline day, not counting the ones from a few days ago with like DeMarcus Cousins. But like this was kind of a quiet deadline.
Yeah, it was at least a quiet deadline day. But I think that might have just mostly been because like all of these big trades they happened, you know,
right,
before.
Like
Ibaka happened before. Cousins happened before. Like, the Cousins trade...
Paul George and Jimmy Butler didn't get traded.
No, they did not. But, like, the Cousins trade, like, that could have happened on Thursday. The Kings could have tried to wait out in the market. They didn't. They decided not to. So, you know, those sorts of things, when they happen on Sunday, you know, it turns Thursday into a buzzkill sometimes. But I think the overall deadline had like, some pretty fun trades, just as a basketball fan. Like, had some pretty fun trades to look at.
Yeah, I mean, like, the Nerlens Noel one is interesting. I'm really interested to see how he does in Dallas. P.J. Tucker, I'm interested to see how he does in Toronto. What other ones even were there that are, like, noteworthy?
Tyler Ennis to the Lakers, man.
Oh, for Councilman Jam. That's right. Councilman Jam got traded to...
He does look like Councilman Jam.
Have we never talked about that before? That's been a thing of mine for, like, 2 years.
No, that's hilarious. He totally
Councilman Jam, Marcelo Huertas. The only member of the Lakers to ever get a shout-out on You're the Worst. Do you watch that show?
No, but I've heard it's good, though.
It's so good. You should watch it. But he gets a shout-out in the most recent season, and it's phenomenal.
That's incredibly unexpected.
Yeah, it's good. Wait, former Parks and Rec star Roy Hibbert got traded to Denver after being in Milwaukee for like a week.
Yeah, he's getting flipped all over the place.
Yeah, so I'm going to be honest. I have not watched.
Well, Sean, let's rehash the trade just for listeners who may not know it. So the Thunder are sending Cameron Payne, Joffrey Laverne, and Anthony Morrow over to the Bulls. The Bulls are sending Taj Gibson, Doug McDermott, and an unprotected 2018 second round pick to the Thunder.
Yeah. So first of all, would the Thunder have done this trade without the second-round pick? Because I feel like the Thunder would have done this trade without the second-round pick, and I think it's outrageous that the Bulls gave up the two best players in the trade and a second-round pick.
I think the better question might be, would the Thunder have done this trade if the second-round pick were protected?
Yeah, like, right, this is just, like, one of those things, like, I don't want to just pile on Gar and Pax too much because, like, we do that all the time on Locked on Bulls, and obviously the fan base is kind of down on them. But this kind of trade just shows how much better somebody like Sam Presti is at that job than they are.
I was so surprised because at first it came out that the Thunder were getting a second-round pick. I was like, oh, okay. I kind of figured they would be the ones sending over the second-round pick.
That's what I thought, too. And I was just like, when I saw the details come in, and I confirmed it with people that I, you know, was talking to in the Bulls front office anyway, and that was just like, wait, they're giving a pick? Like, seriously? Like, what is that?
Right. And I was surprised when it came out as unprotected.
Right.
Like, and when it came out as officially as unprotected, I was like, that's some weird stuff, because that was something I expected. I kind of thought it would be like 31-40 protected or something like that.
That's some nice work by Sam Presti there.
It is. That's a couple of really good trades he's made in the last year between the Ibaka trade and this one.
Yeah, he's done extremely well. So tell me a little bit about Campaign, because I don't really know much about him. Except for he has cool hair and he was Russell Westbrook's dance partner. That's the extent of my – and he had the same foot injury as Kevin Durant. That's the extent of my Cameron Payne knowledge, essentially.
Let's talk about Cameron Payne. Let's talk about Cameron Payne. You'll like covering him. He's a good kid. He's a good kid. You will like covering him.
That's good.
He's a pretty good interview. Now for the part that people who aren't actual beat writers care about.
Right.
he's struggled this year. Like, he's without question struggled this year. And part of that is on him, I think, and part of that is on the fact that he's really been either injured or recovering from injury pretty much all of his professional career. And I think part of that is just on the position the Thunder put him in. Coming into this year, the Thunder really thought, and he had the foot surgery over the summer because he had that the fracture in the fifth metatarsal in his right foot, the Jones fracture.
Which is the same one that Kevin Durant had a couple of years ago.
Right. He had the Jones fracture in his right foot over the summer. He had surgery on it, and he was back. He was in training camp. He had a different fracture in the same bone in the same foot during training camp, and he had to go out again. going into training camp, like the Thunder thought, I think, that he was going to be a 20, 22-minute-a-game guy. I think they thought that he was going to play all the backup minutes behind Russell Westbrook, and then they'd be able to play 5, 8, 10 minutes a game next to each other. Once Payne came back, he's really struggled to shoot the ball. He hasn't necessarily struggled to create shots for himself, but I think he's struggled to shoot the ball. I think he's best when he's got a big center playing pick-and-roll basketball with him. Like he's a pretty decent pick and roll point guard. His best minutes in the 20 games that he's played have come when Steven Adams has played with the bench unit, and they've just run pick and roll after pick and roll after pick and roll, and he's been good at that. And he's missed some shots, but he hasn't necessarily struggled to create those shots. They haven't really been contested. They've just missed. They've been inaccurate. And I think he's not a 33% shooter. Like at some point those shots are going to start to go in. He's going to get a little bit hotter. Now I don't know if he's great. But he hasn't necessarily had the opportunity to play because he hasn't gotten those minutes next to Russell Westbrook. And I think part of it is that it's almost like the Thunder figured, all right, he's – because in Summer League, they played him next to Samaje Christen. And the reason why they said they were doing that in Summer League was because they wanted to give him minutes playing next to a point guard so they could ready him for playing next to point guard at the real level. And I think one of the reasons they got away from it, because when they saw it, they thought – oh, no, he can't guard twos. So I don't know if he's a guy who's going to be able to play next to point guards very often. But, like, the Bulls look like they're just going to hand the reins to him, right?
And if what are their other options? Because, I mean, Michael Carter-Williams has been in and out of the rotation. Jaren Grant is starting right now, but, like, he hasn't been great. And then Rondo is completely in the doghouse at this point. And then, you know, what are you counting Isaiah Cannon even as a point? Like, they really have no other options but to give him every opportunity to earn the starting point guard spot.
Right. So, I mean, I think if they run pick-and-roll basketball, they put the ball in his hands, they play him over 20 minutes a game, they're not...
With Robin Lopez.
Right, right. Robin Lopez is a great screener, too. Like, Robin Lopez isn't that different from Steven Adams. Like, Adams is a better athlete. I think Adams is, like, a better player. But in terms of his style, like, he's a great screener. He's tough. He's a bruiser. Like, he's a guy who will be good for Cameron Payne, I think. And I think he's the kind of guy who he can play good basketball with. So I think that's something that will help him a little bit. I think he's a better player than he showed with OKC. I don't know if that means he's a really good backup point guard or, you know, he's a decent backup point guard or maybe he's a fringe starter or whatever it is. But I don't think he's like a 33% shooter like we saw in Oklahoma City. I think there are a lot of other factors that have come into that, and, you know, from the inconsistent playing time to the injuries to just the fact that, like, they haven't necessarily put him in the best position to succeed. And I don't know if he was ever going to be in the best position to succeed as long as he was here. I just don't think the fit necessarily worked.
So you think this could be a good change of scenery for him and that he could do well in Chicago, basically, what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, well is relative. Like, I think he will be better in Chicago than he's been in Oklahoma City.
Okay, well, that's exactly how I feel about Doug McDermott going to Oklahoma City, just to make a transition here.
Why is that?
Because he's playing, first of all, with an actual point guard in Russell Westbrook, which he hasn't had in Chicago, either playing with post-injuries Derrick Rose or whatever hodgepodge of point guards the Bulls have been putting out. I also just think that his confidence has just been so shot over the last couple of years because he's had all these opportunities to succeed and he hasn't been able to. I think he's just a total change of scenery guy. You know, he's not, I think he has the ability to be a useful NBA player, which he has not been the last, certainly not this season, but the last couple of years before this. He has one elite skill, which is shooting. He hasn't been shooting great this year, but he shot really well. He shot over 40% from three last year. So he has that ability. He's a big guy. He has hashtag sneaky athleticism. You know, he can get up a little bit. I think a new situation will be good for him, and I also think that I trust Billy Donovan more than I trusted Fred Hoiberg to really, you know, call up plays and put him in situations where he'll actually be able to succeed.
Right. That makes sense. And something that I also think will be interesting with how they use McDermott, see how often they put him next to Russell Westbrook in the starting, not necessarily in the starting lineup, but just in the starting unit, because so Victor Oladipo, I think right now he still leads the NBA in percentage from the right corner among qualified shooters.
Okay.
And the reason for that is not because Victor Oladipo is all of a sudden unbelievable from the right corner. He's definitely good from the right corner, but it's because Russell Westbrook is really good at creating corner threes. And it's because defenses collapse in on him like crazy every time he hits the lane. And Doug McDermott is a really good corner three shooter. I think he's like a 41% three-point shooter from the corners in over the last 2 years. But, like, that's like you said, in an offense that's always had spacing issues and guys who have been glued to him and a point guard, never playing with a point guard who's great at creating corner threes. Like, now he's going to be playing with a point guard who's really good at creating corner threes. When a third of his threes this year are coming from the corners, they're like, couldn't he be like a high 40% corner three shooter? Isn't that possible?
Absolutely possible. And in fact, that was what the Bulls kind of expected out of him. And they never had the personnel or the, you know, system really in place to actually take advantage of his skill set. I think he's going to do great in Oklahoma City. Now, speaking of three-point shooting, like, the thing that jumped out to me, I know Joffrey LeVern is a guy, you know, I've watched him a little bit, you know, this year in Oklahoma City and the last couple of years before that in Denver. He's shooting 34.6% from three this season, which is pretty respectable for a center after shooting, you know, in the 20s or teens the couple of years before that. Like, is that legit? Has he actually improved his three-point shot, or is that just kind of a low sample size thing?
The Thunder think he has. One of the reasons the Thunder traded for him was because they thought that he could shoot. You know, he was always – the way that he plays internationally, when he plays with the French national team, they play him as a stretch four, stretch five.
Okay.
Like, always. And I think the Thunder kind of watched that and thought, that's how he should play in the NBA. And that's really how he's played for the last, like, month. Like, the last month or so, he spent even more time behind the three-point line than he was before. He's not a great three-point shooter, but he's, like, very capable. And he also, like, last year in Denver, he shot a really bad percentage from three. But I think he also shot, like, over 50% from mid-range. So he's shown flashes different spots on the floor of being a really reliable shooter. Now, I don't think he's ever going to be like a great three-point shooter, but he's definitely a guy you have to guard. He's definitely a guy that you have to close out on. And if he's wide open, teams should feel really good, or the Bulls now should feel really good about him putting up a shot like that.
So basically, he's what Mirotić was supposed to be in terms of being a stretch four or something.
Yeah. I mean, he's a little bit of a different type of player than Mirotić.
Well, but just that ability as a big man to be able to stretch the floor. If he can shoot a little bit more consistently. And by the way, you're right. I'm looking on Basketball Reference at the shot location data. He did shoot 50.8% from between 16 feet and 3-point line last season in Denver.
There you go. That's an incredible percentage.
That's really good.
Yeah, it's really, really good. So it's not like they thought he could shoot. They thought this was a thing. And Sam Presti talked about it a little bit at his press conference today when he talked about how, like, they got Joffrey LeVern for 2 second-round picks, and they thought that was good value. They thought that was really below where they thought he should be. And one of the reasons they traded him is because now they think the market around the league, like, the league has figured, like, oh, Joffrey LeVern's a useful NBA player who can help a team in somebody's rotation. And they think he's going to get more money than they initially anticipated because of, you know, how he's played that year at this year, and I assume that means people have realized, like, oh, Joffrey LeVern is a five who can shoot threes a little bit. I think the biggest difference between him and Mirotić is that I know the Thunder play him at the four, and I think that's partly because they have Steven Adams and they have Enes Kanter.
Right.
I think in an ideal situation for him, and you're not going to build your team around Joffrey LeVern, but obviously. But I think in an ideal situation for him, he's probably playing his minutes at the five over at the four. Even though he's not a rim protector or you know, a good pick and roll defender or anything like that, but I think when you put him on the perimeter, it really exposes his foot speed, and I think he's just a lot better when he can play the five as opposed to the four. Honestly, ironically, a really good matchup next to him in a bench lineup would be playing Taj Gibson at the four next to him.
Well, it's kind of funny because looking at this Bulls roster, I have to think that most of LeVern's minutes would be at the four as opposed to the five, because obviously the starting center is still going to be Robin Lopez, and then Chris Felicio is going to be the backup center, and then at power forward, that, you know, part of the reason that John Paxson said that they made the trade today was because they wanted to open up some of those power forward minutes for Bobby Portis. And so if Bobby's going to probably basically be the new starting power forward now, and then Nico is basically in the doghouse because they tried to trade him and they basically couldn't give him away at the deadline. I would imagine LeVern is probably ahead of him, of Nico, in the rotation at this point, because they want to see what they have, and they know what they have in Nico already, and they know that he's not good and that he's not going to be around. So I think he's probably going to play a lot of four.
Right, and you have to imagine they're going to play him because he's a free agent.
Right.
He's restricted this summer. So you have to, like, you're not renting a guy so you don't play him. So you have to imagine that they're going to play him.
No, absolutely. And that's something that Gar talked about today, which was that, you know, they, part of why they traded for him is because he's a restricted free agent, because then, you know, then if they like him, then they can, like, decide whether they match on keeping him or not.
Yeah, no, that seems to make sense. You'll also like Joffrey. The interesting thing about the three guys is, like, actually, I feel like it's the same thing with the guys coming over the Bulls. Like, they're all, like the definition of, like, character guys.
Doug is, I love Doug, and the thing I like about Doug is that, like, he'll, you know, this is not shade at him, but there's times when he doesn't know when he's not supposed to say something, which is great for a beat writer, because, there'll be times where, like he'll basically come out and say, yeah, it's just a better vibe this year, like, in training camp. Basically saying, without saying it, that, like, Rose and Noah being gone, like, makes the vibe better, even though that's not something you're supposed to say. He'll basically say stuff like that because he doesn't realize that he's not supposed to say that. Like, it's great.
You now have a duty, by the way. Now that Joffrey's no longer in Oklahoma City, you now have a duty to continue the nickname that Stephen Adams calls him, which is the Big Croissant.
The Big Croissant. Okay, is that a new one? I'll try that out.
That's what Stephen Adams calls it. And then there's, you know, the Zach Harper nickname, I assume.
Kilometers.
Kilometers Plumlee, because he looks like Miles Plumlee.
Does Joffrey LeVern know about that?
He knows that everyone thinks he looks exactly like Miles. I've discussed it with him on multiple occasions. I don't remember if I've brought up Kilometers Plumlee to him, but he's got a really good sense of humor, so I feel like he might find that funny.
So I have an assignment for you now, too, which is I need you to find out what the barber situation is like in Oklahoma City as far as, like, player services.
Oh, I know it.
Because Doug always has the tightest fade before every single game. Like, I feel like he gets it fresh. But I kick myself now for never actually doing this story, because he just stays having the freshest haircut before every single game.
Oh, you have no idea how up I am on the barber scene with this team. I've asked many players about where they get their haircut, and I've asked many players about how often they get their haircut, because I thoroughly believe that like Joffrey LeVern gets his haircut all the time, because he's always got the fade too, and he insists it's every 2 weeks, but I don't believe him.
There's a free story idea for you with the Doug thing. It's become kind of a running joke on Bulls Twitter and, like, among Bulls media, just like how often he looks like he just got his hair cut that day. That's a free story idea for you. Now, real quick, is there a reason Anthony Morrow is shooting 29% from three this year? Like, is that a thing?
I have a theory.
What's your theory?
My theory. So Anthony Morrow, I mean, have you watched Anthony Morrow's shooting form this year?
No, I haven't.
So Anthony Morrow basically over the last year has reworked his shot.
Okay.
So that he doesn't dip the, like, you will watch Anthony Morrow's shot and you will say, "What in the world is that?" Because it is, he doesn't dip the, you know how you catch the ball, you bring it to your shooting pocket and then you shoot, right?
Sure, sure.
He doesn't bring the ball to his shooting pocket at all. So he just wanted to create – it's the fastest release I've ever seen in my entire life. He just wanted to create the quickest release possible. So if someone throws him a pass on a catch and shoot and the ball is to the right of his head, he'll catch it to the right of his head and he'll just shoot it from there without bringing it down even a quarter of an inch. And it is amazing that he's able to do that. Last year he shot 37% and from three, which is a good percentage, but I believe it was the lowest percentage of his career. This year he's doing it pretty much every time he catches and shoots. And I feel like it's possible that the reason that's gone down is just because while this is a great idea and you got to admire a guy who's a 40 some odd percent career 3-point shooter for saying, you know what, I got to get better and I'm going to fix this even more so I can get better. You got to admire somebody for doing that, but maybe it's not working.
Yeah, it seems, I mean, pretty clearly just looking at the percentages, like he's in the, you know, the high 30s or the 40s pretty much every year of his career, and then this year he's at 29, which is atrocious. But I mean that's kind of irrelevant now because they basically said today he's an expiring contract, like he's not going to be here next year, so it doesn't that much. But I was just a little curious about that because that's his reputation, is like the one elite skill he has in the league is shooting, and that's something he just hasn't been doing this year.
Right. No, he hasn't. It's also possible that, and it, you know, obviously these sorts of things tend to be many, have many contributors, but it's also possible that he's been getting inconsistent playing time. He always talks about how he's a rhythm shooter, He'll play 7 minutes one night, zero the next, 14 the next, zero the next, you know. And when he's getting that inconsistent playing time, sometimes it's just hard to find a rhythm, hard to get on a hot streak. But, yeah, obviously those numbers, it's not like he's, like, falling to 35%. Like, 29% is a drastic drop from where he is in the rest of his career.
Yeah, that's crazy. But, again, like, it doesn't really matter for the Bulls that that's happening because he's going to play 25 games in a Bulls uniform.
Right.
So,
let's talk about Taj Gibson.
Yeah, let's talk about Taj Gibson.
Maybe the best player in this deal.
Oh, without question, the best player in this deal. Like, Taj is a guy that, you know, until the Raptors did the Serge Ibaka trade, which obviously took them off the table as an option, we've been talking here in Chicago about, like, the obvious trade being Taj to the Raptors for basically the same package that they gave to Orlando for Ibaka, which was a first round pick and Terrence Ross or somebody as salary filler. So like that's the kind of return that they kind of thought they'd be getting for Taj. And obviously once Toronto's out of the market, there's not really a lot of teams that are a combination of, you know, having a pick and, you know, needing to trade for Taj in order to contend. Like the Oklahoma City is exactly the kind of team that should be trying to trade for a guy like Taj Gibson, because especially, you know, with Cantor coming back from that hand injury, he's they maybe want some more depth up front at power forward there. And Taj is a guy who's versatile. He can play both forward, he can play both front court positions. He can play the, you know, he comes, he'll start, he'll come off the bench, he'll play through injuries, he doesn't complain about anything. He's just like, you're going to absolutely love Taj. He's a great guy. He's super positive. He's super optimistic. His teammates love him. And he's just a guy who's been through some stuff and gotten some really good perspective about stuff as far as, like, an NBA career. Like, I'm going to miss Taj a lot. Like, I'm going to be honest with you about that.
The Thunder could put together, I mean, look, these lineups will not have spacing by any means. But the Thunder are going to be able to put together one of the best defensive front courts in the league with Robertson, Gibson, and Adams.
Yeah, it's very true.
And that's really formidable defensive lineup.
It's crazy, and that's going to make me some really interesting matchups. At this point, they're basically locked in. They're going to get the 7 seed in the West, so they're going to probably play San Antonio in the second round. Like, that's going to be an interesting, because San Antonio has kind of a big lineup too, you know, a big front court lineup too, with like Pau Gasol and David Lee and, you know, different guys that they put in there. That's going to be interesting to see that matchup.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know, last year the Thunder killed San Antonio with lineups with Adams and Cantor too. And
yeah,
they can really, in a playoff series, like, I mean, I think Sabonis is still going to get minutes. My educated guess, and I don't know what they're going to do about starting lineup, my educated guess is they're going to start Taj Gibson. And Sabonis is just going to take, like, Joffrey LeVern's minutes, and maybe he'll get 12 minutes a game or something like that. But come a playoff series, you can play Adams 34 minutes, and, you know, especially if it's against the Spurs, and you can play Cantor a lot. Like, you can play Adams, Gibson, and Cantor in all of your big man minutes, and you're fine, because, like, Gibson can certainly play next to Cantor and Adams.
Yeah, it's very possible, but, I mean, I'll just say this about Taj, and just in terms of, like, how much you're going to like covering him. He, you know, was told he got traded, like, 15 minutes before the deadline, so he was back in the office and then, like, left. And then he found out that the Thunder were sending a private jet to get him and Doug to take them to Oklahoma City. And so he comes back to the Advocate Center and talks to us for, like, 15 minutes.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's rare. That's rare.
Yeah.
That's rare. That's not something you get often from a player.
No, it's fantastic.
Yeah, that's great. I've always heard good things about him. I wonder what his effect. So you know him personally. Tell me, what's he like with the young guys? Like, is he going to have? I've heard he's a great teammate, and I know everyone in Chicago loves him and all of that.
Yeah.
Is he gonna be one of those guys like? Like, Steven Adams always talks about how, like, the effect that Kendrick Perkins had on him when he was a rookie and a second-year guy. Like, is he going to have that effect on Domantas Sabonis? Is that the type of guy he is?
Well, yeah. I mean, you talk to some of these, like Bobby Portis always talks about, like, how much he's helped him. And, you know, Felicio, you know, some of the young bigs that the Bulls have, Mirage to a lesser extent, because they have kind of different skill sets. But, yeah, Taj is absolutely the kind of guy that, is friends with all the guys on the team. Everybody rallies around him. He takes it on himself to, like, give the young guys advice about stuff. Yeah, he's going to be terrific for that locker room, which is, it seems like it's already a pretty good locker room over there in Oklahoma City anyway. But, like, Taj is going to be great there.
Yeah, it's a very it's a very even keel locker room is the way I would describe it. It's a decent amount of personalities. Like, there obviously Russell Westbrook is a big personality. Enes Kanter is a big personality. Steven Adams is a big personality. Andre Robertson is a big personality. But they're all, like, you know, positive big personalities. None of them are. They're all just, like, you know, gregarious, funny guys, you know. And for the most part, the rest of the guys are pretty even keeled.
Taj is like the definition of even keeled. Like, he's the kind of guy, he's always like, whenever the team is like in a losing streak, he'll say, you know, talk about how they're still fine. They're still putting in work. Like, he still believes they can turn it around. And then he'll always, you know, go and praise whoever. The other thing about Taj is he is like the ultimate company man. He was defended Tibbs till the end. And he's also been the biggest defender of Fred Hoiberg the entire time that he's been here.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder how he's going to adapt because he's never played for another team.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting. But the Thunder,
that's got to be just like a weird adaptation, though. Like from forget about basketball. Like from a human level, like since he grew up in Southern California, he went to USC, he was drafted by Chicago, he's played for Chicago for 8 years.
Like, he's from New York, actually.
Oh, he's from New York. That's right. But he went to high school in Southern California, right?
Well, he's already played with Russ because they played against each other in high college.
So from New York, I forgot he was from New York. He's from Brooklyn, right?
And the reason that I will never forget that he's from Brooklyn is because a couple of years ago during Tom's last year here, Taj basically revealed to us after a game in like January that he had been playing through a torn thumb ligament for 2 months. And then what happened was he told Tom about it and Tom said, "Where are you from?" And he said, "Brooklyn." And Tom was like, "Well, that's right. You're Brooklyn tough." And then he just played through it.
Yeah, so the Thunder have three New Yorkers now. I'm not the only New Yorker in
There you go.
The only New Yorker in Oklahoma City, because they got him, they got Billy Donovan's from Long Island, and they got Royale Ivy is from Queens. Knicks legend Billy Donovan. When the Thunder played the Knicks this year, I guess someone as a joke, I assume it was like Knicks PR or something, it was really funny. They put a photo of Billy from when he was on the Knicks on the door to the Thunder locker room. And it was like Billy in like these incredibly short 80s shorts. And Billy was like phenomenally embarrassed. And it was very funny.
That's fantastic. I'm hoping somebody tries that with Hoiberg at some point. I don't know how that would go over.
Fred Hoiberg was too good for that to be funny, though.
That's right. That's the thing. He was legitimately a useful NBA player for a number of years.
Right. Didn't he lead the league in three-point percentage?
He did. He was a good – and in fact, like a running joke among like Bulls beat writers and like Bulls Twitter is that the best shooter on the Bulls right now is the coach.
Yeah, exactly. No, he was – he could play. Like Billy Donovan played like – even Billy is – Billy was the first one to joke about this. Obviously, he was a great college player, but he got a cup of coffee with the Knicks, and that was it. He played, you know, a half a season with the Knicks.
Right.
That was his whole career. And maybe there was some nepotism there because it was Rick Pitino, and Rick Pitino loves him.
Right.
But, you know, who knows? There's no nepotism in the NBA.
No, absolutely not. They're just like there's no reason that Brian Colangelo is the GM of the Sixers except for that he was just the most qualified candidate.
Yeah.
Shout out to that Nerlens Noel trade and basically trading him for 2 second-round picks.
I like that trade for Dallas.
Yeah, no, I love it for Dallas. The good flyer to take on him. Like, they didn't really give much up. I'm real interested to see now whether Andrew Bogut, because they're going to buy him out, like the Sixers are, if he signs with the Cavs or if he signs with the Warriors, because it's going to be one of those two.
Yeah, I will quote Jalen Rose, and I will say, "You don't get in life what you deserve. You only get what you have the leverage to negotiate."
Yep.
And Philadelphia did not have the leverage.
No, they did not.
That was a classic. Like, it's hard for me to knock Philly for that trade because, like, what's What, like, I mean, they didn't get what Nerlens Noel is worth from a quality perspective.
I also love that there was all this stuff about how, like, there were multiple teams bidding for Okafor, and they couldn't give him away today.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I was told consistently over the last couple weeks the Bulls were not as seriously interested in him as was being reported in other places, so I'm not surprised nothing happened there.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think the Thunder were pursuing him. They already got their own. Julius Okafor, a much better Julius Okafor in Enes Kanter. So I don't think they were going for that one. Andre Robertson staying. So I let me say two quick things to my Thunder listeners. Number one, Andre Robertson is staying. I have something up on normantranscript.com about that.
So you mean the fact that he was hugging people?
The hugs.
Tweet, like, that was not, that doesn't mean he's getting traded?
The hugs. So when he was hugging people, we kind of had a we all noticed it, like all the beat writers, we all noticed it, and we were kind of like, what is going on? And we were all just kind of staring at Robertson. Like it was a little peculiar. Like, he came out of the back office and he hugged one of the assistant coaches, and then he hugged one of the strength coaches, and then he like hugged one of the PR guys, and he kept walking, and he like dapped up two other people, and then he went into the back. And the locker room and the weight room are in two different places. Apparently, he was just going to the weight room after practice. And he spoke to us with the media like 5 minutes after this. We actually didn't ask him about the hugging, because honestly, I didn't realize the hugging became a thing, because I didn't realize it got tweeted out at the time. And we probably should have asked about the hugging. But in retrospect, I'm kind of glad we didn't, because it led to Andre's tweet after, which I'm really happy happened.
Oh, absolutely. Shout out to Ralph Wiggum.
That was Robertson had a really good tweet about the hugs. Anyway, somebody tweeted out that Robertson was hugging people. Didn't even speculate that Robertson was hugging people, but the rest of the internet did speculate. And it didn't, it caught fire, because that's what happens on NBA trade, on NBA trade day. That's just the way that the trade deadline goes. There's always drama.
That's right. I like the trade deadline, but I'm kind of glad I don't have to deal with, like, Isaiah Thomas tweeted the eyes emoji. Does that mean the Celtics are about to trade for Paul George? Like, I'm kind of glad we get a little bit of a break from that.
I never touch that stuff. It's fun. I'll follow it. I will deal with the facts when I know the facts.
Derek Rose's either girlfriend or ex-girlfriend or some woman that he's been involved with followed the Timberwolves on Instagram today, and that trade ended up not happening. So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, how about all the Celtics stuff that, like, one of them followed Melo, and Jay Crowder changed something on his Instagram, and Melo started following the Celtics, or the Celtics started following Melo, or whatever it was. And I was like, here's the thing. If you believe that that means that Melo is being traded to the Celtics, then you are saying that the Celtics social media manager knows about the trade before the league office.
And that the Celtics social media manager doesn't get strict orders. Because, you know, teams, like, know about this stuff and care about this stuff. The Celtics team, like, social media manager doesn't get strict orders from the front office to not do anything that could possibly acknowledge it until it actually happens. Like, there's no way that, like, that person is going to know that what's going on and be able to say anything about it publicly before, like, Woj.
Right. Like, wouldn't it be great if the Celtics, like, if the NBA team, if, like, NBA teams actually worked where Celtics make a deal and Danny Ainge is really pumped. They finally got their big name player. They you know, got all these assets. They finally get their big name player. Quick. Tell the social media manager and make sure he follows Melo on Twitter.
God, it's so stupid.
Like, that's not a thing. But it's the drama's hilarious and stupid and
it's the NBA is just the best league.
There's always drama. There's more drama in the NBA than there is in any other league. And I don't quite know why. I mean, it's personalities and but
right.
It's
because we actually get to know these guys as people, because, like, baseball, it's totally anonymous, and football, like, you know who, like, the top quarterbacks are, but, like, guys have helmets on, like, you know what number guys are, but, like, you see, and people talk about this all the time, like, you see NBA players are wearing sleeveless shirts and shorts, and, like, you see what their tattoos are, like, you see their faces, they don't have to wear hats or batting helmets, like you actually get to know them more as people just from that, and they also just have better social media presence.
I think it has to do with the approach the league takes, too. In the way that, like, they allow personalities to stand out for the most part.
And they let people post videos of their stuff on the internet.
Yeah, that's true, too. they don't just let it. They encourage it.
Absolutely. So, yeah. So on that note, this is going to be a fun stretch run for the season. I can't wait for you to meet Taj because you're going to love him.
Yeah, I could say the same thing to you about Anthony Morrow, man.
Cool. Good to know. I'm excited about it. So remember, you can follow me on Twitter at Hyken. You can follow Fred on Twitter at Fred Katz. Read my work at The Athletic. Read Fred's work at Norman Transcript. And leave both Locked on Bulls and Locked on Thunder lots of 5-star reviews on iTunes or Stitcher, Auto Boom, wherever.